You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. Hello, everyone. I'm Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and it has been a very odd month all throughout baseball, but also in the NL West, in that you're not really exactly sure which way some of these teams are going to go. The Dodgers look really good, 17-9, first place in the division, yet they seem to have major problems going on in the starting rotation and trying to figure out how to fill the 4 and 5 spots, which is usually not an issue for a first-place team. And then on the Rockies side, that'd be very frustrating for them because they lost their closer, who was having a fabulous start to the season, and now they have to piece things together there. And the D-backs are struggling a little bit, just trying to score some runs and trying not to panic, but they've acknowledged that they're probably trying to do a little bit too much. The Giants are on a massive surge, so they're starting to look like the Giants, who have won 3 World Series in the last 5 years, getting over the 500 mark, creeping up into the standings, and sort of settling in there. And the Padres are hit or miss, literally. They're either scoring a lot of runs or they're not scoring any, and right now they're in a stretch of about 20 innings straight where they haven't scored a run. So, playing sort of like a 500 team, which is exactly what they are. So interesting things going on with every team, and we will monitor that as the month of May goes on. Ken, I just want to talk about Zach Greinke to start off with, because there's some great stats that have come along with just a fabulous start to the year and really picking up where he left off. The most important stat, I think, that I'm looking at right now is 21-6 when starting after a team loss. So you're talking about a team that's expected to contend and expected to do great things. That is a huge addition to have, or I guess a luxury to have, when you go through a season.
Well, it is, and the funny part about it is that very often he's following Clayton Kershaw, so there aren't that many losses in the past. But there have been this year, you know, unfortunately for the Dodgers. But, you know, they're pretty lucky in that they have this 1-2 punch, you know, and at the time that Greinke signed, it was compared to Koufax and Drysdale, and it's kind of been that way. If it isn't one, it's the other. And last year it was both. This year, Kershaw's gotten off to a slow start, but Greinke's been, pinpoint command. He doesn't throw as hard as he used to, and he doesn't throw as hard as most of the best pitchers in baseball. But his numbers are right there because he can throw pretty much any pitch where he wants it. And he gets overlooked a little bit, but, you know, when the other guy was an MVP, you're going to get overlooked. But he's not overlooked in the clubhouse, and he's a big reason why the Dodgers are in first place.
Yeah, 5-0 starts with the season for the second year in a row. 10, undefeated since last August. Yeah, just amazing. And really, like you say, because of Clayton Kershaw being a teammate, he doesn't get a lot of attention. And now, moving on to Kershaw, a very fine 3.72 ERA in 6 starts, still throwing well, but I know that he's frustrated with some of the results. And, how is he handling everything right now? He seemed to be a little not real talkative after his last outing.
Yeah, he's been snippy, you know, and he's not he's tough on himself, let's put it that way. And he set the bar high, and it's not just the expectations that everybody else has for him, but it's now the expectations that he has. And I think he's, you know, maybe he's trying to show that last year wasn't a fluke, although I don't know that anybody thinks it was. But he just seems to be trying. You know, Greinke said something last night about the difference between him when he won the Cy Young and his consistency now. Is that he doesn't try as hard as he used to. He doesn't try to make every pitch a perfect pitch. And I guess if just from a distance, if you're thinking about what might be wrong with Kershaw, is he might be trying to make every pitch the perfect pitch. And they're not going to always be perfect, and he's given up 5 home runs a lot earlier than he did last year. So he just might be trying too hard. It might be as simple as that.
I want to talk a little bit about Yasiel Puig. The last that I read, he was going to be going on a rehab assignment, eligible to come off the DL on May 10th, and everybody seems to feel that that's going to happen. What's the update on him?
No update, unfortunately. Nothing's really changed. He's in L.A. Getting treatment, doing tests. Mattingly was a little bit kind of riding the fence whether Puig will be available Sunday when he's eligible to come off, but he said it shouldn't be much longer after that if he's not ready there then. But he hasn't gone out on a rehab assignment, so as far as that goes, we don't know.
Okay. And just the starting rotation, so I guess Joe Weiland will be the ninth different starting pitcher for the Dodgers, which is pretty amazing because we're only like 30-some games in the season. But Frias, let's get an update here. He will be starting on Thursday. And so his first audition against the Diamondbacks when he was replacing Brandon McCarthy went well. So that has to be encouraging. I guess they'd be getting some contributions from these guys while trying to piece together the back end of the rotation.
Yeah, that's a good solution to a really bad problem, losing McCarthy for the year and Ryu for who knows how long. We really haven't been given much of a timetable, maybe early June, but the Dodgers have been really dodging the question as far as how badly he's hurt and when he'll be ready. He's also not on a trip back in L.A. Getting therapy with Puig. So it's a question mark. They've been churning all these guys out of AAA to bring them up for a start and send them back down. It's Weiland's turn, and then followed by Frias, who gets his second start. That's almost like being locked into this rotation at this point. So they like Frias. He'll probably stick around even if he isn't a starter because he can be a swing man. But it's not really the way they drew it up, having to fill in your fourth and fifth starters. But that's what they've got to do. And so far they've been able to get away with it to a big extent because the bullpen has been the real surprise. It's been so effective. And picking up games in the fifth and sixth inning and throwing up zero. So if it wasn't for the bullpen, this shortage of starters would really be a problem for the Dodgers. And it's going to be a problem if the bullpen can't keep up this kind of remarkable run.
Right. We should note that as we're speaking, the Dodgers are 17-9, and this conversation is usually about teams that are well under 500 with having so many problems in the rotation. But I think it's sort of been the consensus around people that pay attention to the game that the Dodgers are built probably better than anyone else for the long-term stretch and not so much looking at, short spurts. But I wanted to end our conversation with Don Mattingly. Interesting turn of events, and he brought up a very good point on replay. So there was sort of a little bit of a controversy when it seemed like Ryan Braun may not have beaten Uribe's throw, and they called him safe, and the call stood, and Mattingly sort of had a different take on that. And he wanted maybe the people observing in New York that are making these calls to not know what the original call was. What do you think about that?
Well, I think where he's really coming from is if the umpires on the field have to make a call of safe or out, then the review umpires in New York should have to make a call of safe or out and not say, basically, too close to call, we won't overturn it. He says that's kind of a passive way of doing it. And if the guys on the field have to commit themselves one way or the other, then so should the review umpires. And I think he was kind of making an exaggeration about how they shouldn't know who the umpire is, shouldn't know who the players are, shouldn't know what the call on the field was. They should just isolate on whether the tag beat the runner or not. But I think his point is valid in that there should be wiggle room. It should be decisive. He's either safe or out because that's how the call will wind up being enforced in the game. So the umpire should make it that way as opposed to kind of shrugging your shoulders, say, we can't tell, so we're not going to overturn it. He just thinks he felt that they should take the human element out of it. And I would agree with him.
Yeah, because they basically, by even doing replay, they have taken the human element out. That was sort of the point of this whole thing. You would think that they would take the entire human element out of it. It's amazing to me that you could still look at the replay and not be able to tell definitively safe or out.
Well, and that's his argument. You have to. In baseball, you have to make a call. And so a no call, in his mind, isn't acceptable. It should be one way or the other. And if you have to make a call on the field one way or the other, you can't just shrug your shoulders and say, I don't know, go to the replay. you know, the replay official should be able to say he's either safe or he's out.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. So I think we're all on the same page on that. Ken, thanks so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Okay, Allison, thanks.
I'm here for my weekly chat with Corey Brock, who is covering the Padres and all of the ups and downs of this team that is so interesting to watch. And Corey, as we speak right now, the Padres are exactly 14-14, 500 record. And so the offense seems to be struggling a little bit. I mean, if you had to pinpoint one thing, would that be it as far as what's been going on with these guys the last week or so?
Yeah, it sort of depends on the week. You know, they came off a really successful series against the Rockies at home where they swept Colorado, scored a bunch of runs, put up a lot of crooked numbers on the scoreboard, and, you know, then they head to San Francisco and get in a situation where you run into some pretty good pitching with Madison Bumgarner, Ryan Vogelsong, who's struggled this year, pitched awfully well. So, yeah, they've had these streaks where they've scored a ton of runs. You know, they were leading the National League in runs. And then they've gone 22 innings and a 20-inning stretch where they didn't score a single run. So, you know, it's a little vexing. I think it's still kind of the old adage where, you know, good pitching will beat good hitting. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that. You know, but by and large, yeah, scoring runs, backing the starters. You know, the bullpen's been a little bit shaky early in the year. But, yeah, 14-14, I don't know if that's the fans consider that a tremendous disappointment. I think that's a pretty good spot to be in the first week of May.
I would imagine that the Padres, I mean, it's sort of, when you look at the teams that are sort of having similar problems, long-term expectations would suggest that teams handle things differently. I would imagine, and I'm thinking about the Diamondbacks, who seem to be, you know, sort of calling a, you know, casual team meeting just to remind everyone to just stay focused and start scoring some runs. But I would imagine for the Padres, it's probably a little bit of a more even keel, and there's not any kind of, I mean, panic sounds so stupid coming in the second week of May. I would imagine that they're probably still feeling pretty confident.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Allison. I think you also have to look at the composition of the roster in terms of when you need to, need to address things behind closed doors or whatever, and they're certainly not anywhere near the point of that. But you also look at the guys in that clubhouse, veteran guys. You know, they changed the roster. They brought in guys like Matt Kemp and Justin Upton, who have some lengthy service time. And, you know, Derek Norris has been in the big leagues for a few years, and certainly some of the incumbents have been around for a while. So, you know, I think they feel like, you know, these guys do a pretty good job of policing themselves, and they certainly are putting in the work. And I still think they like the composition of this roster, 1-25. You know, they just brought up a top prospect, Austin Hedges, to catch. So they feel like they really strengthened themselves in that backup capacity there, because that catching spot is, as you know, such a brutal position. So, you know, I think 1-25, they still feel very good about this roster.
And that brings us to my next question about Austin Hedges. So how is that going to be split up? I see that Eric Norris, I mean, they want to monitor him. They do not want to push him into the, you know, catching 150 games. So how will the playing time split up between these two?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, Austin Hedges is regarded as probably one of the top defensive catchers in the minor leagues. And honestly, he's probably been ready to catch in the big leagues defensively for a couple of years now, put in a lot of work, you know, in the system with coaches and instructors, and actually had the benefit of working with someone near and dear to you, Brad Ausmus, when he was a special assignment guy here in San Diego. Of course, he's with the Tigers now. A.J. Hinch worked with Austin as well. So two guys with some really good pedigree in terms of catching mechanics. A.J., of course, has moved on to manage the Astros. So but Austin talked about how influential those two guys have been on him. So, you know, I think he's going to get his starts sporadically. You know, they're going to look at Derek Norris eventually at first base, just on a very limited basis, and that's mostly to save on some wear and tear with his knees. And he's been dinged up in the first month of the season, foul ball off the ankle, took a backswing to the left toe. You know, it's a brutal position, and, you know, he told me in spring training he wants to catch 120-plus games. You know, that's a lot. I think you have to really throw out Salvador Perez as a true outlier. I just don't think guys are cut like that anymore. The position is so brutal and so demanding. So, you know, they'll mix in the starts here and there. We have interleague play coming up, maybe an opportunity to let Derek Norris DH and get Austin a chance to catch. So it'll be kind of fun to watch how they do this. And, you know, for a young guy, you know, it's a pretty, you know, highly anticipated guy, Allison. You know, as I pointed out, you know, this is probably the most highly anticipated arrival of a homegrown player since 2007 when Chase Headley came up. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, if you look at that in the big picture, that's it kind of shows sort of the sad state of where their farm system's been. You know, they just haven't done a very good job in Bud Black's 9 seasons of drafting and developing, getting these players to the big leagues. But this is a homegrown guy. They're excited about him, and you know, he's not going to sit here to collect dust. He's going to play some.
Let's move to the starting rotation. So it seems that Brandon Morrow being on the DL is it's kind of interesting. So it's more preventative. So he's got shoulder inflammation, but they're basically putting him on the DL so that it's only a 2-start stint instead of missing 4, 5, 6, 7 down the road. Which is, it's unfortunately he has to miss any time. Just we've had a fabulous start to the season, but I guess they feel pretty confident that he's going to be back soon.
Yeah, and he does too. I think it was a situation where the you know, it was tougher for him to bounce back after each start. You know, they took a look at the shoulder, saw some inflammation. This will be a chance for them to shut him down for a couple starts here, a couple weeks. And, you know, I think it's going to save him maybe on the back end, that maybe if you you nix a couple starts now here in May, that you may gain, who knows, maybe 3 or 4 at the end of the season. You know, they're always going to watch his innings total this year. You know, this is a guy that threw 33 innings last year. He's already at that now, 54 innings in 2013. So, this is probably getting ahead of the curve here a little bit. And, you know, they also, they're blessed in the sense they have Adrisimer Despaigne, who they could just slide in the rotation, as they did earlier in the year for Ian Kennedy when he had the hamstring issue and went on a disabled list. So, they feel good in the sense that they already have a guy on the staff that they can move into that spot and cover those innings for a couple starts or longer if needed.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence that the teams that I continuously talk to about having the Despaigne's of the world ready to go and effective when they do step into those roles, that those are usually the teams that are still in the mix by the end of the season. So depth is so important, but it can't be more important than in the starting rotation.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the old adage, and I know you and I have talked about this, Allison, you know, you never finish the season with the same starting five that you began it with. It's just, you know, these guys are expected to make 33 starts and remain completely healthy and throw 200 innings. Well, that's asking a lot of the guys. This is a different era now, especially with the, you know, specialization of the bullpen. You don't necessarily need starters to work so deep into the game anymore, but, you know, it takes a big toll on guys, and if you could have a guy on your staff that you could slide in and feel very comfortable with, and they certainly do with Despaigne, without having to reach in your minor league system or, in worst-case scenario, Allison, go outside your organization and try and find a guy to fill that. That's an awful position to be in, and this is a position the Padres have been in the past. So, yeah, they feel very good that they got Despaigne, that they could slide into that. He's kind of a proven commodity. He doesn't have the lengthiest service time or history, but, you know, he's fared pretty well in the big leagues, and they, you know, shortly over a year now that he's been pitching here.
Well, we will keep paying attention, and thank you, Corey. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Allison.
Steve, so let's sort everything out here. You've been sitting in rain for 2 days, and there has been no baseball played whatsoever. So as we speak, you are heading into a doubleheader, and, of course, it will be over by the time this is posted. But there was some shuffling of the starting rotation. And can you just go over that? So Robbie Ray was called up to pitch game 2. He was going to replace Bradley. Now they need another starter. So how is this all shaking out?
Well, Allison, they were going to have Robbie Ray come up and take Archie Bradley's spot in the rotation. And he was initially supposed to pitch on Tuesday. And then, he flew to Denver on Monday, but because he wasn't on the roster, of course, he had to stay back at the hotel and not come to the ballpark. And then when they got rained out both Monday and Tuesday, now he's scheduled for game 2 on Wednesday here. So he got kind of like a nice few days just hanging out at the Ritz-Carlton in downtown Denver without coming to the ballpark. And they actually, they don't have to make a roster move to get him on the roster because he's going to be designated as their 26th man for game 2, which teams get nowadays when they have doubleheaders.
Wow. Okay. So I see that there was a, we're not calling this a team meeting, because, of course, if you call it a team meeting, then everyone freaks out and thinks that there's, like, everybody, you know, panicking about how this is all going. But Chappell did have a conversation, it seems like, with the hitters to just maybe diffuse everything and remind them about what they need to be doing.
Yeah, you know, he sat in on their regular hitters meetings that they have each day to go over the opposing pitcher. And a lot of times he'll do that, but this time he wanted to do it, you know, specifically because he wanted to also send a message that, you know, he understands that everybody's pressing, everyone's trying to do too much because, you know, that when anytime the offense struggles, everybody wants to be the guy to kind of snap them out of it. So they're trying to do too much. And he wanted to just remind them that, that there was a team effort. No one guy was going to carry them. And so to, you know, try as hard as they could to kind of take a breath and take a step back and not try harder, but actually try easier, if that makes any sense, and see if that works. Now, they had that meeting on Monday and they haven't played since then. So no way of knowing whether or not they took his words to heart yet or not.
It's got to be kind of frustrating. I mean, they've lost an extra inning. There have been some close games. I mean, does that make it tougher to keep forging ahead when it's – I mean, I would imagine if they were just, like, getting blown out every game, then that would be a different story. But that's got to be frustrating for them to just be getting barely edged out so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially that final game in Los Angeles, which was a 1-0 loss in 13 innings, because, you know, you can always look back when in a game like that or in any kind of one-run game where you know, a hit here or a hit there would have made all the difference in the world. And that's kind of what Hale was trying to get his hitters to understand, is that he understands that, but to not put pressure on themselves in those situations to be the guy that comes through with that one hit.
I found it interesting that the first inning has been a problem for the pitchers, and then they sort of settle in after that. And pitchers at this recording have a collective 6.55 ERA in the first inning. So they come up with some interesting things to try to combat that. Sort of like a routine, like pregame routine. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they've tried different things to kind of figure out what might be causing those first inning issues. And so they've actually even tried having pitchers, when they're warming up, when starters are warming up before the game, they actually sit down, kind of simulate that the first innings happen. They sit down and then they finish their warm-up pitches. They've also tried having a batter stand in there, obviously not swinging, but a batter stand in there and kind of simulate the first inning as to what he's going to see, whether it's a lefty, righty, left, right, however they, you know, however the opposing lineup is set up for that day. So they've been trying a bunch of different things. And most frustrating, I think, too, for them in the first inning is it seems like a lot of times they get the first two outs of the inning, but then have a hard time getting that third out without run scoring. So that's been kind of a head-scratcher for them, and pitching coach Mike Harkey has tried a few different things with the starters to see if he can kind of snap them out of that.
So I wanted to just briefly talk to you about this. We're running this story on a where are they now on Rodney McRae, which the name does not just spark memories right away of who he is, but his all-time blooper, he was, as a minor league player, he was running after a fly ball, and he ran into a billboard in the outfield. The outfield wall was a billboard and ran through it, and it was like a swinging sort of wall, and so he, you see it on all the blooper reels, like the introduction to some of the blooper reels. It's constantly on that. The beauty part of this is that the guy who hit the ball was Chip Hale, who is now, of course, the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So you talked to Chip about that, and it sounded like, from what you said, that he just remembers it perfectly. Like, he has such a crystal clear memory of that. Is that the impression that you got?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as soon as I mentioned Rodney McRae's name, you know, I mean, immediately he was engaged in it, and he remembered, you know, he actually remembered it was a hit and run on that play, and he remembers that when he hit the ball, he thought, wow, that's a home run, and as he was kind of running to first base, he was watching Rodney McRae running and kept thinking, whoa, doesn't he have to stop? Doesn't he have to stop? Because he was, if you ever see the highlight, he's running full speed when he hits the wall. So Chip kept thinking, no, he's got to stop, he's got to stop, and then he hits the wall. And, of course, you know, Chip talked about the fact that there's that part of him that wanted to keep running straight from first base out to right field where this happened to make sure he was okay. And there was the other part of him, the competitor part, that said, you know, okay, well, there'll be time for that later, and let's just try to get as many bases out of this as I can. And he actually got to third because the ball bounced away so far. So he remembers it. I mean, he was talking about it like it happened last week. I was really surprised at how crystal clear his memory was of that.
That's got to be tough when you're wondering if, I mean, this wasn't just a typical potential injury. I mean, you have to think that the guy might have really done some damage to his face. To keep running around those bases, I don't care who it is, that has to be a tough thing.
Yeah, and we saw that the other night when Carlos Gonzalez of the Rockies hit Archie Bradley in the face with a line drive back up the middle. You know, I mean, I'm sure that Cargo's first reaction was just to stop at home plate and make sure the pitcher's okay. But, you know, he continued to run the first base. It's just something he had to do. And you could just tell, you know, Paul Goldschmidt told us after the game, he said, you know, he felt bad for Cargo because he clearly, when he was standing at first base, was shook up by the whole thing. And Paul said that, you know, he actually went over and talked to him at first base and just said, hey, you know, it looks like he's going to be okay. It looks, you know, he's going to walk off here under his own power. So it looks like he's going to be okay. So it's a really tough thing, you know, you have to do your job at those situations, but certainly the human element tugs at you as well.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, everybody that we have been talking about, everybody's okay, including Roddy McRae, who actually gained some fame for this whole thing. And that area of the outfield at that ballpark is now McRae Alley, and he got his own bobblehead in 2006. So everybody walked away happy. Steve, thank you very much, and hopefully the rain will subside for you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good, Allison.
I am here with Thomas Harding, who has been sitting in 48 hours of rain delays, waiting for his Rockies to play another baseball game. And, Thomas, I don't want to start on a negative note, but we kind of do need to cover this, that Adam Ottavino, we talked about this last week, but the closer, it appears that Tommy John surgery is likely. So he seems to be handling it okay, but what's the vibe that you've gotten?
Well, he's, you know, not very happy about it, obviously, and I wouldn't be either. He is actually visiting Dr. James Andrews in Florida today, and the probable thing is he'll say, you need Tommy John, and Adam Ottavino will just jump on the table and say, do it now. It's really a big blow to the Rockies. The guy was, you know, scoreless in his 10 appearances and was really effective. I mean, he was throwing the fastball faster than ever. The slider was a devastating pitch, and now we'll have to wait till next year to see if, you know, he's able to rehab it and get back to that stage.
And so there's two pretty viable backup options here, or replacement options. So John Axford, he's going to take over as closer, but of course we have Rafael Betancourt, who can also possibly close games when Axford may need a spell here and there. So how confident are you in Axford that he can handle the job?
Well, I've watched him this year, and it's very good. He's hitting the spots he wants to hit. He's throwing strikes when he wants to throw strikes and balls when he wants to. The difference between now and what happened to him over the course of last year is when he really needed a strike, last year that strike was not a quality strike. It was in the middle of the plate, and it was getting hit. Or sometimes when he wanted to throw the curveball, it would hang in the middle of the plate, and it got hit. What I'm seeing now from him is those pitches are sharper. So we'll see what happens as the year goes on, but he is in a pretty good place right now. It's funny, the Rockies, they brought in a number of guys who could close. I mean, they had Latroy Hawkins, they brought back Betancourt, and they brought in Axford. And the thought was, if you've got closer types pitching in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, then you've got a really good bullpen. That depth has been eroded a little bit. Latroy Hawkins has been hurt on the DL with a biceps tendonitis, and now Ottavino, but it's still a pretty good bullpen, although it comes back to starting pitching. Forgive me if I've talked about this before, starting pitching.
Yeah, that's where I was going with next. So let's talk about starting pitching. Kyle Kendrick, struggling. He's allowed 10 home runs. It's the most in Major League Baseball. Jorge De La Rosa has been better in his last couple outings. Still not great. So what's going on with them?
Well, it's almost like you're just waiting for those guys to find their form, and you hope that the bullpen doesn't burn out before then. You've got some promising guys, especially De La Rosa. I really believe, after watching him in San Diego, he's almost back to where he needs to be. It seemed like it was last May that he kind of turned the corner, and it's reasonable to expect that out of him. The other questions would be guys like Tyler Matzek and Jordan Lyles and also Eddie Butler. Can those guys provide some sort of consistency and get a little bit better because they're still not getting deep in games. If they can get a little bit better, then there's a chance, you know, this team can pick up a bit. They've had 2 5-game losing streaks, so the question is, are they this team that's going to have repeated 5-game losing streaks over the course of 162 games? It's doubtful because of the offense that they have. Can they get these losing streaks out of their system and perform better? It all comes down to starting pitching. If it does happen, it's not a hopeless case around them.
Yeah, and, I mean, are they looking for progress? Because we seem to always talk about, we kind of lump them all together, the young pitchers, and that's it, Lyles and Butler. So are they looking for progress? Are they looking, I mean, this is sort of a transitional year for them. But, I mean, I guess the leash is pretty long, right?
Well, it's weird because, you know, behind them are guys like John Gray and it's really a young group. I mean, I don't think that they wanted to see this as a traditional year. That what they wanted was for the guys to develop as the year goes on and maybe turn really hot and then pitch well enough to help this lineup out. So that's what they're looking for. For those of us who look at it from the outside and look at the experience level, you can't help but look at it as a transitional type year, the type of thing where you say a guy like an Eddie Butler or John Gray when he gets here, or Tyler Matzik, or even Jordan Lyles, who's only 24. You can't help but look and say they should be better next year and the next year than they are this year. But with the lineup that they have, that's the issue. Can they be better enough fast enough?
And we have to touch on the fact that the offense on the road has started to struggle a little bit lately. I mean, they've been doing pretty well throughout the first month of the season. But I guess when it comes to the Rockies, and if they start struggling on the road, then we all have to talk about it just because of what happened on the road with them last year. So is there any kind of, concern about that with the bats when they're away from Coors Field?
Well, I think that there's so much concern about the pitching, they don't have time to worry about the bats right now. And if you look at it, their last road game was Sunday against James Shields. And that was one that was really disappointing because they put up 5 runs on James Shields and chased him after 5 1/3 innings. This is a guy who hadn't given up more than 1 run in any start at home this year. But because Kyle Kendrick pitched so poorly, they couldn't win that game. So you're going to have big games on the road. You're going to have a lot of slow games on the road simply because that's who the Rockies are and that's who the Rockies always will be, is because it's such a great hitting atmosphere. And there's so much about the atmosphere that changes on the road. I think that reasonably you're looking for a team that will try to break even on the road. But they can't do it when they're not getting pitching, when they're wearing out their bullpen, or when the starter is giving away leads as soon as the team gets them.
And is there depth? I mean, are they going to? It seems like it's going to be a season of sending guys up and down and in and out to the bullpen so that they don't get burnt out. Is there enough depth to be able to keep them going?
Don't know yet if there's quite enough depth. I mean, they brought up Jorge Rondon last week, and he was spectacularly bad, and he got designated for assignment a few days later. But some of the guys they brought up, Scott Oberg has pitched pretty well. Kenny Roberts is up here, and he's pitching. He had a good debut the other day. It does look like they have a number of different arms, but when you ask about the depth, there are questions because you had Rex Brothers, who was one of the better lefties in the major leagues. In 2013? He had an awful year last year, and we're seeing a lot of the same down in Albuquerque, where he'll throw some good pitches and then some bad pitches, and the numbers look horrible. I mean, they've got to find a way to get him back to where he was in 13, where he had a sub-2 ERA. If you're capable of that for 1 year, you're capable of that beyond that. And they still haven't figured this out with Rex Brothers. So there is bullpen depth in name, but I don't know if they're going to be able to actually use it because of some of the issues that a guy like Rex Brothers is dealing with.
So 2 straight days of rainouts. What do you play, tic-tac-toe up there? I mean, you go a little stir-crazy. I know the first game you had to wait 2.5 hours for them to call it. The second game they called it early. So is you get a little nutty not watching any baseball?
I'm going to be pretty lonely today, I think. But on the second thought, this was a scheduled game. I think tonight is going to be the lonely night at the ballpark. It'll be one of the makeup games. I think the other game will be made up a lot later. There is rain in the forecast again today. I mean, I'm just hoping to see baseball. You know, sitting here in a booth watching tarp on a field is not exactly exciting. So I'm just hoping to see baseball.
Exactly. Getting on weather.com and watching the radar just move, it gets a little mundane after a while. So I am sending good thoughts and sunny wishes to all of you out there in Denver. And thank you very much, Thomas. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks for having me.
And I am here to discuss the surging Giants with my friend Chris Haft, who covers the Giants. So, Chris, this is about as much of an upswing as we can possibly get to at this point in the season. So the Giants, as we're speaking, and of course they're heading into play on Wednesday when this is being recorded, but the Giants are 14-13 and in second place in the NL West. I can't believe I'm even looking at the standings this early in the season, but I guess it's now part of my job to do that. What has been going so well for the Giants in the past week?
Largely, Allison, it's the starting pitching, and which is a familiar formula for this team, of course, since since the 08-09 season. They've pitched three shutouts in a row. You know, fabulous starting pitching from Tim Lincecum, Madison Bumgarner, and Ryan Vogelsong in that stretch, and that's something they haven't done since June of 2012 when they had four shutouts in a row. It's been a nice turnaround because in the four, five, six, seven games before that, the rotation was pretty ineffective. So,
right.
did people see this coming? Maybe not, but once you get a little ways into the season, you know, guys settle down, guys will often tend to find a groove, and that's what's happened here.
They also have, if I have my calculations correct, eight wins at home in a row at this point as we're speaking, and I would imagine that when they're not winning at home, that's got to be a little bit extra frustrating for them just because they're a team so built for that ballpark and they feed off of the energy. I mean, we've talked many times about just what it's like to be at the Giants home game. I mean, they sell out every game and it's just people are so into it. So it has to be kind of nice, I'm sure, for them to have gotten into this groove at home where they sort of expect to win.
Yeah, you just said it. They do expect to win. It's a big disappointment when they don't win for them at home. But when they do win at home, you know, one feeds off the other. The fans get even more into it, which of course motivates the players even more to reach a higher level of play, and things feed upon themselves. I think that's why they. You see, maybe I don't know if it's an inordinate number of series sweeps that they record every year, but even when they're struggling, they seem to do much better at home.
So Brian Vogelsong, I'm just fascinated by the guy, that's why I keep bringing him up. So I think this is like the third week in a row that I want to talk about Brian Vogelsong, but he just seems to. I mean, he's a veteran pitcher, and so it's not surprising at all when he has a bad outing. Come back and have a fantastic outing. And to do it again, his most recent start against the Padres, who, have this great offense and they're starting to struggle a little bit, but seven set-out innings against them, a three hits, two walks. I mean, so that's so huge for the Giants to be able to stay above the 500 marker, just keep their heads above the water, as they say. It's going to take guys like him to just keep going, especially with the regulars in the rotation. But as we've discussed many times, a couple of guys are out of the rotation right now. So for him to do what he's doing has to be so nice for the Giants.
Oh, it's huge. It's so important, and that's why they re-signed him, to provide this kind of help. I've been of the opinion that he's going to end up pitching a lot more than people thought he would at the beginning of the year. And, you know, we'll see. It depends on the health of Matt Cain and Jake Peavy. But you know, so far, it looks like he may, at this rate, he may end up getting, who knows, 20 starts maybe. It remains to be seen. But he made a few mechanical adjustments that helped him overcome his what ailed him in Los Angeles when he gave up four home runs in three innings in his previous start. Plus, besides the mechanical aspects, he is such a determined guy. You knew he wasn't going to go out there and have a second game in a row like he had at Dodger Stadium.
Is it a situation where, like, when he has a bad outing like that, and he kind of knows, like, when he works on mechanical adjustments in between starts, he's obviously working with his pitching coach, that they've kind of, like, know right away what's happening? And is that, I guess that works to his advantage when you can just, like, pinpoint it coming out of that start? And so, what do you do, like, in between starts to just make sure that that doesn't happen again?
It sure seems like he's able to pinpoint things right away, because this has happened a few times where he's had a bad stretch or a bad game, and he comes back with a good game or a good stretch. Why he can't repeat things all the time, I think that just speaks to the difficulty, the challenges of pitching. This is the guy who is a former All-Star. He should be able to maintain consistency, but he can't, and I don't think it's because he's a bad pitcher. It's just because it's a goal that's hard to achieve. But he was able to sense what was wrong. He felt like he was aiming the ball instead of just throwing it and letting it go. And maybe that's a easier thing to fix than other pitching flaws. So. He went out and did it last night. I mean, the Padres only got three runners into scoring position against him in seven innings.
Wow. So when I read through the coverage on a daily basis, I saw the news about Angel Pagan out with a lacerated finger, and I just kind of like threw my hands in the air and said, "Oh my God, not again!" That has to be so frustrating for him and for the team to have this come up. He's tried so hard to stay on the field the past couple of years, and it seems like things pop up. And this is just, like, so out of nowhere. What is the status on him?
He's day-to-day, Allison. I mean, the lineup hat today hasn't been released yet. He could come back today. I doubt he will. I'll probably at least give him another day. But, they're hoping that this is not anything like, the back problems that, or hamstring trouble that have sidelined him for prolonged periods.
So I don't want to end on a negative note. So let's talk about a couple guys that are doing well. First of all, Madison Bumgarner has really gotten back on track after having a subpar April for him. Let's keep it all in perspective. So, what have you seen from him the last couple outings? Does he look like the same guy that we've been watching for a long time?
Pretty much. He's talk about a guy who just lets it go. He's been letting it go. He's regained a little bit of velocity, which makes a big difference. And, overall, he's looking like the guy who pitched Game 5 and Game 7 of last year's World Series. So, that's a big boost for the Giants, obviously.
Yeah, but it's not as much fun for us to talk about how he pitched way too many innings last year, and so he can't possibly repeat. Because now what are we going to talk about?
Well, it is a long season, so let's see how long he can sustain this. He lasted one out into the eighth inning in his Monday night outing, and I suspect that maybe if he hadn't gone, had the workload he had last year, Bruce Bochy might have let him finish the inning, maybe even finish the game. But there are certain times, I think, when Bruce is going to remove him just a little earlier than usual, just a little bit, to preserve his arm. So the Giants are still very aware of what he's been through.
Absolutely. Well, it's now that we're into the second month of the season and the Giants seem to be creeping their way back up into the standings, and so it's looking a little bit more normal than we saw in April. So we will keep our eye on it, and thank you, Chris, so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.